you're hearing this before listening to the weekly show, are you sure you meant to do that? If not, stop now and go do that first.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Oh, that went so...
How did we have the train wreck in the end there?
What train wreck?
It's been a good show.
That was excellent.
Tune in right now for the Extra Large Extended Edition. Available on discourse.co.nz or in your iTunes if you're already subscribed to the weekly show.
Ben, I imagine you probably need to have a nap because you've been going solidly for at least an hour and a half.
I've had two beers, I'm good. Okay. But I will bail soon because I need to get back to Battlefield.
Okay, who from the chat room is going to join us for the overflow? Everyone is welcome.
Switch take on how long I will last in the XL already being opened in the chat room.
Let's fill this thing up. Let's see how many people we can have on Skype. It will probably be no more people because no one will want to join that kind of that kind of madhouse.
So what do we need? Skype names?
Send us your Skype names.
Yeah, send it to...
and you're poor and you're huddled and you're hungry.
Send it to whoever. I should probably make a more public name. Oh, everyone knows my name. Morgan Nickel on Skype. Just add me. We'll see who we get on. All right, we've got more stories. I've got another story. Let's
I think I've got one more.
Let's push a button.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
Why not push that button again?
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
All right, who wants to do another story first?
Can I do one?
Yes, you can. You're always welcome, Robin.
Yay, okay. So... In swearing news, in Labour's opening address,
this is so cool.
Damien O'Connor was talking about National's financial policy, the trickle-down theory, and he said, it's the rich pissing on the poor. That's their trickle-down theory. And I thought that's great that he has actually said the P word. He said pissing. And, you know, saying urinating or peeing or going wheeze, or, you know, it wouldn't have the same impact.
No.
He said pissing, and it was great political rhetoric.
He's my new favourite Labourite.
That's at 9 minutes and about 9 minutes 20 if you want to watch online.
Now, you'll remember, of course, that piss is around the middle of our swearing list from last week. It comes in at 26% of people surveyed in 2009, 1,500 people surveyed, find that word is totally or fairly unacceptable.
That would have had the national nerds.
I was going to say, that means 26% of people are terrible prudes.
Oh, well, it's actually gone down. It was 38% in 1999 and 32% in 2005. So we're getting slightly more accepting of pissing on people.
I have more swearing news.
Oh, great.
last week, the Broadcasting Standards Authority, the High Court overturned a BSA decision. Basically, on an episode of Sunday, someone used fuck twice. And it was an interview with a guy talking about a police officer who shot David Gray in the
Carolina
massacre. And it wasn't sweary. He just sort of said it.
Wasn't he relating the actual words from the incident?
It could have been, but yeah, it wasn't this kind of big abusive thing. And another thing noted was that it wasn't even in a loud voice. You'd have to be listening very carefully to hear it. So the High Court overturned it and said, BSA, you've taken this too literally. You've got to look at the context. So that's really cool that was overturned.
It was quite unusual because the BSA's decisions are normally quite rational in that respect. I remember reading about that decision when it came in, and it was very unusual. I thought it was very unusual that they'd chosen to.
I've heard they're tightening up a bit, right. Just recently.
Cunts.
Like your mum is.
Oh, no.
Morgan, nice to say about Dylan's mum.
Let me see if I've lined this up with no audio.
That they think the trickle-down theory will deliver to each and every New Zealander. Well, we know it doesn't. You know, it's the rich pissing on the poor. That's their trickle-down theory.
Oh, he's so good. He's my new... he's my new favourite for next Labour Prime Minister.
Yeah.
He's too old.
Is that like necessarily a problem? Robinson. How old is he?
I don't know. He just looks too old and wrinkly. He'll never appeal to the grannies and the... you know. I don't know.
I don't think he's that old. 1958.
That's not that old. He's 55. Old. What's the problem?
That's good.
I think we're trending young, you know, young statesmen these days, aren't we?
But they're not Obama, statesmen. Obama. Well, how old is Obama?
Obama's like 50.
Yeah. No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
How old do you think he has been? Because I've just looked it up.
I'm going to say mid-40s.
He's about 52.
He was born on August 4, 1961.
Was he? Have you seen his birth certificate?
I've seen his faked Hawaiian birth certificate.
It makes him 50 on the dot,
oh, he's
right?
50. 50. Yeah, why do you think he was older than that? Oh.
Because you're living in the future.
Wasn't he the second youngest president ever or something like that, or third youngest?
Why do we give a shit about American politics? What's New Zealand's history on prime ministers and ages and stuff? I don't know.
He looks really young because he smokes.
I think mid-50s. Yeah, that makes you look younger.
No, because he's a super chill dude.
I think mid-50s is a totally reasonable age for a prime minister.
Yeah, me too.
All right, fine.
But of course, the Labour won't have a prime minister in office in New Zealand for at least another 6 years.
Even longer if Phil Goff remains at the helm.
Let's be honest about that debate, though. Anyone who's saying that it was a tie is saying that Goff won, because we've had years of our media and ourselves, me included, saying that he had no chance. So anyone saying that he... Mm. After years of basically being mocked that he tied, then he's actually fighting a real uphill battle.
Now, I know we're amongst rampant left-wing socialist reds under the bed right now.
Pinkos.
But was it just me, or was that debate incredibly biased, the presenter?
He was useless. I don't know if he was biased, but he was useless.
He basically went to... I mean, maybe he was giving the hard questions to each person, but he just seemed to have a bunch of patsy stuff in there, like the patsy question about the mining and this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
To biased in which way? I haven't actually seen the debate.
I have to admit, I was watching out the corner of my eye because I was doing other stuff at the time, but it seemed every time there was a question to John Key, it was a question about, I'm trying to think along the lines of beneficiaries need to get off the dole and this sort of stuff. How are you going to improve on that, John Key?
Right.
And then to Goff, it was, you've said you're going to borrow $17 billion worth of stuff. What does that mean for the country? You know, it just seemed a little, I don't know if I was misreading it, but it felt like the questions were being lined up wrong, incorrectly.
John Key, what is the worst mistake you've made while being in power? My worst mistake while being in power is getting a really good deal on some BMWs.
So Lance says, crap, that's good to know. I was just my confirmation bias then, which is again why I'm not bothering with them.
I would say that some of Key's answers were really shit. When asked about lying, he said, well, you know, things sometimes are fluid. And Goff was like, yeah, I don't think you should lie. It's like,
no, dynamic. The situation was dynamic. That's the new get out of jail free card.
That's it. The situation was dynamic, so I can talk shit all I like.
I'm going to say that in a meeting at work. No, the situation's dynamic, I'm sorry. I'll have to change my mind.
It's interesting. I'm starting to... I mean, not that I haven't been interested in politics, but I've been starting to look at some of the policy stuff. I guess it's just coming out. I've been starting to look at some of the policy stuff on the National and Labour websites, and my overall take on it is I find Labour's policy stuff really frustrating. They don't say anything.
Yeah.
They just kind of set out these really broad ideas about what they think they might like to do.
Yeah. That's one thing I've said from the start is that regardless, you know, all of it's baseless and rhetoric and fucking electioneering. National has so much better tight talking points, tight statements.
Yeah.
You know, it's all unallied comparatives and stuff like that. We will do better than this and we'll get less than that.
We will not raise GST.
But they're very, very tight and very accurate.
Yeah, it was a very accurate statement, very specific statement. We will not raise GST.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that doesn't matter. That gets them voted in.
That wasn't. Was that a policy? Who knows? But the thing I find is, the national ones are quite specific. They state what they want to do, how they think they'll do it, what they think it might cost, and where that money might come from. Most cases, that money will come from a mixed ownership model. But Labor doesn't say that. What Labor says is, you know, we'd like to, in the case of the broadcasting, we think we might like to make a public broadcasting entity that would be TVNZ7 and Radio New Zealand
and some internet stuff.
and some internet stuff. We don't really know exactly what. And we'd have a debate before we did it, and then we'd change our minds based on the debate. It's like, well, that's not a policy. That's just a vague statement of intent that could have been summarized in a sentence. We think we should have public broadcasting, and we'll figure out how to do that if you vote us in.
I'll give you my policy, which would simplify on this. Make TVNZ our public broadcaster, but TV1 doesn't have to be ad-free. It can be TVNZ7. It can be, you know, some other channel. It doesn't have to be the highest rating one, but there's got to be some. I think there should be a charter again. I think there should be some proportion of New Zealand ideas. Yeah, not just, who wants to be a whore on this island and then... but first you've got to decorate your room by, you know, painting it with a wife swap or whatever.
What I think works is the model that kind of exists right this very minute, which is where TVNZ doesn't have a charter. The commercial broadcasters in New Zealand can compete for a contestable fund to make New Zealand relevant television programming. And we have still, for the moment, TVNZ 7, which is a public service broadcaster and is making good content. The problem with TVNZ 7 is it's now run out of funding. It can't make any more content and it's going to die soon.
Yeah.
I think that works. TVNZ has the facilities and resources and... you know, infrastructure to make good programming. They've got it set up there already. They can keep it going. Yeah, that's what I think.
Not letting TVNZ 7 die is really the key thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it should die.
Because it's the only place with really
decent...
There's
money to be made out of TV, so therefore private companies should be making the money out of TV and public broadcasting has no part in it.
Eh? But that's not true of any of the countries that we like to measure ourselves against.
But there's money to be made, Morgan. So it's
yes, there's
the
money
private,
to be made, but every other country
can do it more efficiently than anyone else.
But every other country, well, time and time again, it's been demonstrated that the private sector is really good at selling things down, selling them off for scrap, and then needing to be bailed out.
That's the one thing that scares me most about the mixed ownership model is basically, you know, dams will need to be upgraded and replaced. We'll need more electricity at some point.
Yeah.
There's no fucking way that a private company or private ownership is going to allow for that to happen.
No. Actually, now here's my thing. Right?
They'll set it up to sell it back and have the government pay for the new dam, just like ultra-fast broadband, just like rail, just like Air New Zealand.
Yeah.
What in terms of someone says, what does Australia have in the way of public broadcasting? They have ABC, which is a fully non commercial, and they have SBS, which is ethnic. I guess you'd say it's kind of like Maori television.
Is that funded by donations and stuff, or is SBS actually state funded?
No, I think they're both state funded.
I think SBS
sure.
is not like Maori television. SBS is more like Triangle.
And yes, Australian television is shit. But what I was going to say, the mixed ownership model thing is really interesting, correct? Because the story I got from Labor for a long time and all their billboards and advertising campaigns was no asset sales. Labor will sell all their, or National will sell all their assets. And then National comes along and says, well, actually, no, it's the mixed asset. It's the mixed ownership model where we will sell no more than 49% of the assets and we'll retain blah, 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 and all this stuff and come out with specifics. And so I think, despite the fact I'm not particularly in favour of selling assets, I think, well, that's not as bad as Labour seems to be portraying what National will do. The problem is...
That's because National have changed what they're doing. They've changed it to kind of a wet fart version, which is harder to argue against.
Well, maybe, except then I actually go and look at Labour's website, and if you go to the asset sales thing, they actually make some really good arguments against the mixed ownership model, but they characterise it as selling our future and selling our assets and stuff, yeah. And so I tend to think that they're arguing against a straw man, not what's actually being
but
proposed.
With our useless New Zealand media, you need to have these really sharp sound bites. It's very hard to get any nuance into your argument.
Yeah, I guess it
when
is.
When you only get 2 seconds.
I guess it is. I just the point was that I sort of discounted Labour's argument against it on the grounds that they were fighting a straw man, which they actually weren't.
Right. Yeah, it's tough.
But yeah, mixed ownership model is National's term and asset sales is Labour's. They're talking about the same thing, I guess.
Now, what were the presentations called? National and Labour had 20-minute long ones and the Greens had an 8-minute long one. They were like the
party political broadcasts. Party political broadcasts. They were mandated by law.
Opening now, presentation.
Opening yes. presentation. I think that's what they were referred to. I thought... Very clearly, Labour's one was fucking brilliant. National's one was really badly made, and I haven't actually watched the Green one yet.
The National one, I'm kind of the National Green one was a little bit more like Labour. It was pretty much a stand up and talk. It was quite well done. But the National one, I have so many questions about that. Like, was it deliberately made to look amateur? And and also, do they just? Intelligent people who are going to vote National just going to vote National, and dumb people who are going to vote National will have thought it was a real town hall? Is that how it works?
Yeah.
I was listening to it. There was a hum.
Yeah.
And like I can hear a hum right now, but that's okay because this is discourse. Yeah. We don't have a budget. Whereas you would think, like, one of the, Dylan, you will probably agree with me here, with one of the lessons from 48 Hours, making a budget short film, is it's okay if your vision's a bit crappy, but your audio, there are no excuses for bad audio.
Yeah.
That's a huge truth in video production, and it's, I've heard it expressed that good sound increases the signal to noise ratio of the video by 3 decibels. But basically, what it means is that people will put up with crappier looking video if the sound is good.
Yeah,
but that's completely true. Both.
Yeah, like watch. God, like, have you watch seen TV the multi? Close your eyes for a while, and then watch TV, and somehow watch TV on mute and see how long you can deal with it, and then watch TV with your eyes closed and see how long you can deal with it. You'll do a lot better with just being able to hear it.
Watch the multi TV ad with the white background. The green screening is the worst I've seen on broadcast TV. I mean, it's worse than some of those shitty little rant at your webcam on YouTube green screen efforts. I can't believe how bad it is. They also talk a bunch of shit.
The thing I thought also when I was watching the Labour one was straight away from the outset, I thought, man, this is not going to turn on a swing voter. It's all negative and history and...
This is a funny thing. This goes to the discussion that you didn't want to talk about with Tohunga Rae, which really fascinated me on Twitter, because I'm going to recap it as I understood it. You, at some point, you've had a few exchanges with Tohunga Rae on Twitter about National and about
we
him.
I'll talk about it. We talked earlier about, I tried to talk to him about, you know, clean and green, and the fact that, look, if dairy is so important to New Zealand, then shouldn't we be very conscious about dairy's impact on the environment so that we can keep dairying going longer? And, you know, he was just dismissive and saying, no, farmers are great, you know, they're doing a great job, dairy is important. And he said, oh, and it's too, you know, Twitter's not the right place for it anyway. So I actually direct messaged him. He said, you know, call me. So I direct messaged him. He gave me his phone number. I didn't call him. Then we talked about something else. What were we talking about after that? I can't remember. Some other situation.
Yeah.
And he was again dismissive and calling me, you know, calling me names, this sort of stuff. So I called him up and said, I'd love to have a chat. You know, I'm seriously interested in why we need to, you know, do asset sales, because, and if someone can convince me we need to, then I might very well vote for that party. Because, you know, I am curious. I've heard, you know, I've talked to lawyers and other people who say we have to do it to free up the capital markets, and that genuinely interests me. And if there is a real genuine reason for it, then it might change my mind about who I'm going to vote for. But he went straight into it and called me a time waster and said, no, you're just a bloody time waster. You never voted National in your life and all this sort of crap. And so I just gave up and said goodbye. And then, you know, then furthermore, he's then told you that there's no way I ever voted National, which is fucking bullshit.
So,
you know,
so
I,
then
you know,
he tweeted.
History is, yeah, yeah.
So presumably just after you hung up the phone with him, he tweeted, just spoke to @NZBen. So it's not just a reply to you, it's a mention of you. So everyone sees it. Just spoke to NZBen, got him pegged, Labour/Greens, he's a time waster, or something like that.
Mm.
And I just thought, I basically replied to him and said, you're full of shit. You don't know what you... Well, I don't know what I said. I think I called him a dick. I said, you're being a dick.
Mm.
And
I think it's safer to call someone an egg.
An egg. I should have done that. I called him a dick, and he called me on calling him a dick, which I shouldn't have done. But here's what he said. He said, so NZBen rings me up and tells me he is an undecided. Well, he's not. He's a time waster who is going to vote Labour or Green.
NZBen is not voting Labour.
What?
Ben is not voting Labour.
Well, no. Ben's probably like me. Ben's probably going to vote the Green Party for the party vote, which I think I'll probably do.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know about Ben, but I'm in an electorate, right? There's no chance in hell that a Green MP will win my electorate vote. I don't even think they've got one, but I haven't even seen any campaign posters for him.
Yeah, complete waste of vote regardless.
So I'm not going to vote for him or her, whoever it is. I'm going to vote for a National or a Labour candidate based on other things. But I mentioned this. I sort of suggested that to Tohunga Rae, and his feeling seems to be that people are supporters. He's like, no National supporter would say those things. So I was like, well, he's not a supporter. He's a person who's, you know, going to make a decision based on talking to people. Why don't you be that person he talks to? Is it, you know? It was bizarre, and he seems to have the mindset that you know, he's only willing to talk to people who are supporters, and that just seems ridiculous.
Hmm. Oh, I mean, it's easy for him. Makes his life easy, right? So he just talks to supporters and gets good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's easy. You know, if you talk to supporters, that's fine, and you think, you know, everyone's congratulating you on how good it is. It's hard to talk to people who don't agree with you.
Yeah. It's impossible to argue people who don't agree with you around. No,
there's no, you know, if someone's completely against you, then obviously no point trying. But if someone is genuinely interested in the position you have, then, you know, in the points you have to make, which I think Ben was in this case, and I am, you know, still, I'm still generally interested in what different politicians have to say about their policies and things like that. I'm not, you know, I'm not an ideologue one way or the other. Then that's a valuable discussion. And he seems to be writing that off, and quite publicly, and in a dickish way, or an eggish way, if you prefer.
Yeah. I have a really hard time dealing with him on Twitter. I can't follow him. I don't like the way he engages with people. He seems to be a real bully. And I think maybe I mentioned this last week. I don't want to say anything defamatory, but I understand he's not there to make any difference. He's there to get the pension. He just wants to be there. He wants to have enough days in Parliament to get that big fat pension. And that's as simple as it is for him.
He thrives on drama and on having an audience. And the most powerful thing you can do is to just not pay him any attention.
Yeah, that's right. Unfortunately, we might not be paying him any attention, but we are paying his salary. And he's a tool. And National, as soon as he gets his days, of course, he won't stand again. And that'll be good, because someone else will take his place. And that person, whoever they are, will be better.
Yeah. I mean, in the same way that I can't get hung up on some people abusing benefits, because for the most part it's a good thing, I can't get hung up on some politicians being dicks and collecting a salary, because for the most part they're generally useful people.
The thing that there is one, many aspects, but there's one particular aspect that interests me about the way he interacts in politics, which is that the way politicians interact with each other in the House is completely and utterly it's not like real life. No one else, no other company, no other organization, no other group of people treat each other like that in the community.
Yeah.
You know, in public, to each other's faces. They're shouting at each other, they're abusing each other, they're calling each other scumbags. So, you know, if they're doing that, that's their day-to-day work environment. You know, how does that reflect on the way they see the constituents, they see the members of other people's party, they see, you know, people who don't vote for them? And that, I think that's pretty broken.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it would be so nice to see people in politics, in Parliament, and just generally in politics, being grown-ups.
Mm, it would be.
That'd be awesome. And sometimes they can. And what's interesting is so far, I mean, given there's not very many of them in Parliament, but so far the Greens seem to be doing a pretty grown-up thing. Did anyone see their Green Room debate thing the other day?
No, I didn't. And I didn't.
But there seemed to be a lot of buzz about it on Twitter. Like, the people who were, you know, partaking in it were really enjoying it.
Was it they invited other minor parties to come and talk to them on their thing, or was it just them talking?
There were comedians. There were people like David Slack and Michelle Acourt doing commentary.
Oh, wait, comedians, Michelle Acourt?
Someone else said that.
Which is it, comedians or Michelle Acourt?
Sorry, comedian.
Yeah.
No, that's not my criticism.
They were, I think it was kind of like a commentary track.
Yeah.
Right.
So just a bunch of people sitting around talking about the debate as it happened, critiquing it and probably making snarky comments.
Right. I'm just much more interested. The Greens and actually a lot of the smaller parties seem to be much more willing to engage in a rational way.
Yeah.
I guess because they have so much more to lose, they have to kind of, you know, take things in strides. They can't just rely on big sweeping talking points. But you know, it's good.
Dan Capper in the chat room: robust debate is good. Hurling poo at each other is what monkeys do. Actually, we've got so many good comments in the chat room. We need someone who can actually read them all out for us. There's also someone in there who has chosen the nickname of Toe Henare, and if that really is you, Toe, then please join us on Skype. Add me. Skype username is Morgan Nickel. All one word. It would be great to have you on and to tell me I'm full of shit if you think I'm full of shit. And even to call me, a pinko liberal, even though I am actually voting National in the next election. It'd be great of you, actually, to guess how I'm going to vote, just like you guessed how Ben's going to vote.
And how the best part was guessing how I did vote. You know, he must have access to the...
Oh, yeah, that's right. He said you'd never voted National or something.
Which is a categorical lie.
I have voted National. Yeah. I've voted National. I've never voted Green.
I have voted
Labour.
I replied back to him on Twitter and said that, in fact, you had voted National and even ACT, and that I'd just been talking to you about it. And he said, well, clearly he's misled you or something. I was like, what the fuck?
That's the thing that really fucked me off. You know, you go and you can talk to me all you want. You can talk to me direct in my face. If you talk to my friends with invalid history and tell my friends that I am being, you know, somehow misleading them, that's fucked. You know, that's ad hominem. To the max, you know, ass loads of ad hominem.
Yeah,
it was very, very strange.
Yeah,
a very strange engagement.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, by the way, Morgan, you are, of course, a full of shit pinko liberal.
Thank you.
Hey, guess what?
Yes, Robbie.
We were talking about president's ages.
Yeah, and you've looked it up.
There were four. Barack Obama is the fifth youngest president at inauguration. The younger ones are in descending age order. Ulysses S. Grant, who was 46, Bill Clinton, who was also 46, John F. Kennedy, who was 43, and Theodore Roosevelt, who was 42, and Obama was 47.
Yeah, that's where I got the 40 mid-40s thing from, because I knew he was young when he was elected.
Yeah.
And I forget that it's been 3 years.
He looked much younger. As the handy graph
demonstrates, most presidents are in their early 50s, or in their 50s, actually. Most presidents are in their 50s when they're elected.
Right. What's the oldest?
The oldest, that's a good question. Hang on.
It was nearly Dick Cheney.
Scroll down. Someone quite recent-ish within our lifetime.
Reagan?
Yeah, 69.
69 when elected?
Yep.
Wow.
Far out.
Go the chipper.
Far out. Good for him, eh? Good for him. I don't know if I've ever actually watched any of his movies. There are some good westerns out there. Actually, let's talk very briefly about a site that I think all of us are using. Robin? Yes, you're definitely using it. Letterboxd. Letterboxd.com. If you want an invite, here is a one-time offer only in the chat room. Put your email address in quickly. I will give it to the first three.
Ben's got like 50 million invites, so, you know.
Everyone gets more invites, Dylan.
Yeah, but Ben's got like a million. He's been given special invites.
Yeah, all right, Dylan. Yeah, I'm sure he's much closer with the boys than I am.
Have you seen the Indiana Jones trilogy?
Yes.
That's on my desktop dashboard thing where I
reviewed them in order. Yes.
God damn it, it's impossible to copy and paste out of a friggin' chat thing when it doesn't select properly. Now, Letterboxd, it's a site. It's a very simple proposition. Put on movies that you've watched, maybe review them, maybe rate them. Maybe add movies that you want to watch. You know, it's pretty simple. It's not about TV shows. It has a really great big database. So the movie that you want to watch will be in there. It's got great people on there is really the key thing. It's got really, now not a lot of reviews, very short reviews mostly. But it's lovely. It's so nice to use. I really like it. That's it.
Good. I've logged. I just haven't had a lot of time to go through and start thinking about all the movies I've watched in my life. But I've had a couple of looks around. It's quite neat. I'd like them to do a TV one next, because actually I watch more. I'm more interested in TV shows, like what our aunties are talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that would work really well socially. Because, you know, I tend to learn quite quickly who has similar tastes in television to me.
Yeah.
And when trying to find new or interesting things to watch, that would be quite good.
I suggested to Matt that they should add TV, and he said that they wanted to focus just for now.
They could just copy and paste the source code and put TV at the top, and it'd be all done. Surely it's that easy.
the site is made by friends of all of ours, the boys at Cactus Lab. God, it's good. It's really lovely. We've got a comment from Sakura59, who actually is listening on Mixlr, but doesn't appear to be in the chat room. So is not in the in the comments. I think it's really great, very nice and sleek UI, and that's absolutely true. It really is a lovely looking site, very nice. And that is pretty much the Cactus Lab modus operandi. Lovely. Lovely. Absolutely lovely. Yeah, so I've invited people. There you go. Enjoy your stay on this lovely site. I'm over 600 movies in my list that I've watched. I have a very hard time with some of them, though. There's a lot of Westerns where I'm not sure if I've watched them. And there's a Star Trek movie. I'm not sure if I've watched the fifth Star Trek movie. So
The new one or the fifth one? The new one?
No, the new one. Everyone's watched the new one.
Star Trek 5. I can't remember what it's called. Star Trek 5.
Is it the Spock one?
Search for Spock? No, I've seen Search for Spock.
Was it the odd-numbered ones are good and the even-numbered ones are bad? Is that the Star Trek?
There is a rule. I'm not actually sure what it is. Now, Star Trek 5, The Final Frontier.
Right.
The Final Frontier from 1989. So I almost certainly have seen it, but I'm just not sure, so it's not on my list. Directed by William Shatner, probably a bad sign.
I don't think so. That sounds good.
Now, Ben, it has been great having you on the show.
I've enjoyed it.
We've missed you for a couple of weeks. I understand you've got a bail now. Thank you. Thank you once again.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night. Love you guys.
Great having you on.
Love you too, man.
Don't be a stranger.
Yep. I won't be a stranger.
Don't be any stranger.
Yeah, no, he's gone. He's gone now.
More strange. Don't be any more strange.
Very well done. Now, are we going to add someone else? I don't know. Nah, let's wind this up, eh?
No one else seems to want to join.
Does anyone want to chitter chatter? Do you want to chitter chatter, or do you want to wind this up?
I have this. There's this two things. It's politics again, but there's been these. So maybe. What do you want? You want to go there?
Is it politics? Is it going to be? Can we maintain our current velocity on it?
I don't know. We can try. There's two policies that. I was wondering. I've sort of been critiquing Labor a bit, because I think their policies, like I was saying, are a bit more wishy-washy. But also they're blogging a lot on it, so it kind of makes it easier for me to just kind of post comments or whatever, which National doesn't do. Maybe to their benefit, who knows? So one is a Labor policy, and it's the GST on fruit and veggies thing, which I may have mentioned before, which I think is ridiculous. And they've just, you know, they haven't even announced details of it, but they've just posted about it on their blog a couple of times recently.
Something that I liked about... I haven't had to deal with GST for a while because I haven't been running the business that, you know, that my last business for a while. I like that it was really simple. If it was an international client, they got GST at zero. If it was a New Zealand client, they got GST at... Well, at the time, it was at 12.5%. I think that having to differentiate between... The differentiations, as we've seen them internationally, between fresh fruit and vegetables, what that even really means, what groceries are. I mean, some of the distinctions are pretty ridiculous. Like, I saw one example was milk has no GST, cocoa powder has no GST, but chocolate milk has GST.
Yeah, that's in Australia. They've got all these flow charts to decide whether things are GST rated or not.
It's like absolutely I was saying on ludicrous. Twitter,
it's like if your fowl lays an egg under a full moon and it is gathered by a virginal maiden, no GST.
Basically, it's that crazy. Now, Labor's policy, to their credit, is to try and they recognise that arbitrariness is really complex and they want to try and do away with that. And their theory is, well, that's no problem. We'll just make it only fresh fruit and vegetables. People say, what about canned? No, not fresh. What about frozen? No, not fresh. Which is, I have two problems with. One, it kind of defeats the purpose. If the purpose is to get people to eat healthier food, canned and frozen veggies are healthy and available year-round. Often a lot more cost effective than fresh for certain types of vegetables, and they're good. They haven't got additives, they're just vegetables, especially frozen. There's that. And then, as I understand it, and I can't find any details because I don't seem to have details on what qualifies, but as I understand it, the definition for fresh in this case would be no processing. So someone said, what about a fruit salad? A fruit salad wouldn't count because it's been prepared, you know, someone's chopped up fruit and put it all together. So then, what about, I don't know about your supermarket, but when I go to my supermarket, near the front, they have some kind of, you know, easy stuff. Some preparation has been done already. So you can buy a vacuum-sealed bag of cut-up pumpkin pieces, peeled and cut-up pumpkin pieces, which, you know, pumpkins are a pain in the ass to peel and cut up sometimes. That's just, all it is pumpkin, but it's been prepared. So that presumably you have to charge GST on that. You can also get, you know, like when pineapples are in season, I think they are at the moment, often you see...
Half a pineapple,
or pineapples, you know, skinned and cut up, because again, pineapples are a pain in the ass to peel and skin. That sort of stuff, that's prepared. Now, that's ridiculous because it's just the same. But the bigger issue I have is that Labor seem to claim there'll be no compliance cost, and that it will... And they cite a study that was done where three groups, or some purchases in the target demographic were split into three groups. One was a control group, nothing changed. One got education, telling them to buy better food, basically. And the other got, I can't remember if they got education or education and a disc, if they got just a discount or if they got education and discount, but basically they got given a discount on fresh fruit and veggies, a 12.5% discount, which wasn't correct because, you know, it should have been 11.11%, but anyway, they got a 12.5% discount on fruit and veggies, and it increased their purchasing of fruit and veggies by 11%.
Right.
Now, that's Labor's argument, that because those people got a price incentive to buy fruit and veggies, they bought more. Which completely falls apart because they didn't get a price incentive. What they got was a discount.
Yeah.
They knew what the normal price was, and they got told they would get 12.5% off that price.
Yeah.
If you take GST off fruit and veggies, you don't get that anymore. All you get is the price.
Yeah.
And it's not like retailers set prices. They don't say, goodness, a kilo of bananas should cost $2.67. We'll add GST. And all that just comes to $2.99, so we'll just make it $2.99 a kilo.
Yeah, funny coincidence that every price ends with a nine, isn't it?
Yeah, they cost $2.99 a kilo because it's a nice round price, and that's you know, a reasonable price for selling them. So if you take GST off, it's not going to be $2.67; it's still going to be $2.99.
Yeah.
One thing about the argument with GST on food is that rich people, they go to lengths to get out of paying income tax, and they will have their accountants do tricky things.
Yeah, but they still need to buy food.
They still need to buy food, and when they do buy food, they have a lot of money to spend on it and to buy the really nice stuff. So a lot of tax comes in from rich people buying food.
And they spend disproportionately on high-quality food.
Yeah, whereas poor people will spend low amounts on food. So it is actually, you are going to lose out on that income.
Yeah, which is another, like, the main thing is the psychological benefit in the study that they proposed doesn't exist if you just take GST off food, because the prices aren't, you know, unless you're going to require that supermarkets display what the price would have been if GST were charged and then present the actual price as a discount. And then the other issue is compliance. So if you're a dairy or a small fruit and veggie store or something, you know, you've probably got a cash register where you punch in a number. It's basically a glorified calculator.
Yeah.
You have no way at all to record what items are GST inclusive and what aren't. So when it comes to doing a tax return or a GST return, you can't.
Yeah.
Because previously you can just go, well, here's all my sales. Everything I sell is GST inclusive. Therefore, the GST I pay on this is, you know, whatever the proportion, 15% or 12.5% or, you know, of that is my GST, and that's what I pay. Whereas once you don't have that discrepancy, so either you need to go out and you need to purchase a more advanced point of sale system, or you just stop selling those things. If you're a dairy and you currently sell bananas and apples and onions and potatoes and a few other things, you just stop selling them because it's a pain in the ass. You can't do it, and it just puts you in potential strife for you know, legal requirements for GST filings.
Yeah. I think that a simple tax system, which is what we currently have with GST, is a good tax system. Poor people who can't afford food, they should, just having a tiered income tax. So people who don't earn so much don't pay so much tax as a proportion of their income. I think that's a better solution.
And then to the so-called
problem.
And then to be fair and balanced, I've got a problem with it. Well, I've probably got lots of problems with national policies, but I've got a problem with the national policy they announced today. It's their reform of their welfare reform. I haven't had a good look at it. There's probably a bunch of things on there I don't agree with, or maybe there are some I do agree with.
I haven't had a good look at it. Let's not do it this week. Let's do it.
Well, no, it's about. But the what I have had a good look at is the. The changes to solo parent benefits.
Yeah.
There's two things. So the aim is to get solo parents back into work, which I have some issue with to start with, but, you know, they've made it a tiered structure. So if your child is over 14, I think your youngest child is over 14, then you're expected to be available, they say, for full-time work. Now, of course, that's still reliant on John Key, plucking ghost jobs out of his whatever. So, you know, so if you're 14, because your parent...
he's tucking, sorry, ghost jobs out of his keyhole.
Out of his keyhole. Nice. Because if your children are 14, they can look after themselves. You're expected to be available for full-time work. Now, obviously, you still need to, you know, deal with some complications, picking up from school or whatever, maybe, or who knows. But that's reasonably okay. Then if your children are between 5 and 14, you're expected to be available for part-time work. The theory being, of course, that your children are at school most of the day. So you're available part of the time. But that overlooks the difficulty of actually managing a part-time job around school children, because not many jobs go from, you know, 9:30 till 2:30, especially not part-time jobs. You know, they tend to be in retail and they tend to be odd hours in a weekend day. So you then have to have childcare, and childcare is expensive. And if you're working really on a minimum wage job,
I've looked at it because I thought about having a kid.
Yeah.
Before I realized that there was a biological problem with that, I thought about having a kid. Then I looked at how much it would cost to put a kid in daycare versus, you know, get a nanny versus, you know, all those other options, and it's really expensive.
It is really expensive. So even if it's only part time, you know, there's issues with, you know, availability and stuff. And, you know, we looked at, like, Melanie looked at going back to work for a while, and we looked at what she could earn and what it would cost for us to have a child or two, depending on, you know, when, what the ages were, in daycare. And we'd basically, she'd be working, you know, all these hours for basically to pay for daycare.
Yeah.
And so then there's the other thing. If you are on the DPB and you're in one of these two situations and you have another child,
yeah,
because you irresponsibly went out and had sex, because you shouldn't.
What, with all the drinking and all?
Yeah. Then you get one. You get 1 year off, and then you're expected to go back to whatever it was before. So if you had a child over 14, you have a new baby, then you get 1 year off, and you're supposed to be available for full-time work again. And it's the thing, you know. It's just I think it's a small price to pay societally to have parents not have to go to work to pay for childcare for their children so they can go to work. It just seems ridiculous. Anyway, that's it. I think we've bored Robin to death.
Not just Robin.
Yeah, no, there you go. Those are my two political rants for the moment.
Hey, Dylan.
Hey.
Do you want to be able to stream Hulu or BBC iPlayer, even though you're not currently in America or the UK?
That'd be really good, because I like watching TV and
do
stuff.
Do you have some reason for wanting people who try to look at your internet connection to see not that you're in New Zealand, but instead that you're on some anonymous IP address in Canada, Sweden, France, England, America, or Russia?
Mainly just porn.
Do you just generally want to have your anonymity protected on the internet, maybe because your government has recently passed some kind of stupid law or whatever?
Definitely.
Tell them to mind their own business, and you mind yours. Go to discourse.co.nz/VPN and sign up.
Sounds very costly.
It's surprisingly uncostly.
Wow.
Let's wind this show up, eh, guys?
I have one more thing.
One more thing?
This just showed up in my Tumblr feed. It's one of those news and brief things. It's one sentence, and it's really good. Title, A Foul Blow. Yeah. A Queenstown man has been arrested for assault after a fight allegedly broke out after he farted in bed and his wife sprayed him with air freshener.
Who got arrested?
I don't know. The man. The man was arrested.
Well, she sprayed him.
Well, allegedly.
Allegedly.
So what's the charge?
He allegedly hit her.
What? He probably sprayed his bum with it, you know.
Ah!
I like that they probably kept this can of air freshener by the bed because there'd been incidents in the past.
Oh. Just keep a box of matches by the bed. Set them on fire. That'll serve them right.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines. All right. Thank you very much, listeners, once again, for making it through to the end of an overflow. Wow. Good
that
for you.
Cool.
You little battler. It's more of a marathon than a sprint, even though this week I'm actually not sure how long it is. Might only have been half an hour. Something like that. What a great show. I thought that Paul Brislin was really, really good.
He was great. We need to get him on.
I'd forgotten how good it was having guests on, actually, given the break that we had from having lots of guests on. Everyone that we've had, with one exception, has been brilliant, actually, frankly. Everyone is interesting about the thing that they're talking about, especially after a bit of editing. even that one person who I do not rate was pretty bloody good. Just not coming on again, that's all. Everyone's good. Yeah, more guests. It's wrangling one more person, mate. I mean, we all know that, you know, we should have, a couple of hours on Tuesday night. And even so, very often, one or more of us is unavailable. Somehow I manage to always find the time. Somehow. Actually, that's not true. It's just that when I take a break, the show doesn't get made.
The secret is to do it in bed. So then when you're finished, you can just roll over.
Yeah. That's the way genius. I do sex.
Yeah.
And with that, we draw the show to a close.
Thank you, listeners. Love you so much. Rate and review the show on iTunes. That's it.
Was fun times again.
It was great.
Goodbye.
Fish and chaps.
The show is cancelled. Beep.
Don't forget to rewind the tape.
Hello. I'm
really very Jonathan.
I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello.
I'm really
I'm
very
Jonathan
Jonathan.
Normal.
Hello. I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello.
I'm really very Jonathan.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm really very Jonathan.
Hello. I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello.
I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm really very Jonathan.
I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello. I'm Jonathan Normal.
I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello.
I'm really
I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello.
I'm Jonathan
Jonathan.
I'm really very Jonathan.
I'm really very Jonathan. Hello.
That was really nice.
Hello.
I'm Jonathan Normal.
Hello.
I can feel that you really care.
Hello. I'm really very Jonathan. Sleep tight.
Nighty night.
Don't let the bed bugs bite.
See you guys next week.
I'm Jonathan Normal.
Bye.
Goodbye.
How's
I'm
out?
Jonathan Normal. Goodbye. Okay. I'm Jonathan Normal. Goodbye. I'm Jonathan Normal. I'm really very Jonathan. Goodbye.
Bye, Morgan.
Ciao, bro.
See you later.
Goodbye, Jonathan. Goodbye, Dylan.
Bye-bye.